When people think about Jesus, they think about a lot of things. I'm not sure, though, that they always think about sin. When you look at the Lord's life, though, that was one of the topics that he spoke a lot about. He was also very direct. And you might, from one perspective, think that Jesus was talking about the people in the world, but that wasn't really who he came to deal with, was it? Jews, Gentiles in the first century world, and who did the Lord come to deal with? Well, okay, that's true. Jews or Gentiles? Which group of people primarily? He came to his own people. He came to the Jewish people. So if he was going to say a lot about sin, chances are the Jewish people were going to be the focus of many of those topics. And that's what we see with tonight's material. So as we think about Jesus and sin, bear in mind that we're primarily dealing with verses that would relate to God's people. The people who really should have had it figured out. The people who should have really been trying to live righteous lives. Let's ask one more time. Is there anybody that needs a copy of the book? Okay, there are some at the back if that turns out to be a need for you. We left off on page 25, point E, is where we need to begin with. We have here a reference. He says Matthew 6, 23. Actually, that is a typo. It should be Matthew 23, verse 23. We'd like to head somebody over to that passage. And then also, as we're looking at that chapter, look at verses 16, 17, and then verse 33. We'll just stick with that for a little bit longer and then ask for our other helpers as we get further into the class. Who wants to start out by reading Matthew 23, 23 for us? Okay, Betty?
Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye tithe mint and hyssop and cumin, and have undone the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. But these you ought to have done, and not to have left the other undone.
Thank you. We'll answer our question based on that reading in just a minute. Let's pick up what the author notes. He says they, that would be the people who were supposed to be the people of God, they were very meticulous. They were very scrupulous. They paid attention to the small details about some of the tiny things, but they omitted the weightier matters of the law. What do you think Jesus meant when he talked about the weightier matters of the law? The weightier matters of the law. All right. Just like our law, are there, all laws are important. All laws are laws. But do we attach some more significance to certain laws than other laws in our society? Yes, he actually gives us some examples. And those are some things that God was really paying close attention to. But let's put that on hold for a second. Our society, what would be some laws that we say they receive a lot of attention? Other laws, they're still law, but they receive less attention. All right, you kill somebody, there's a law against murder, and that's not going to be treated in the same way that's going to be, somebody who's 5 miles over the speed limit or 10 miles over the speed limit. So yes, both are breaking the law, both are going to have consequences, but we do not see them equally in terms of significance or in terms of the punishment.
I was going to say crimes in general, but also you pointed out one there, speed limit law, but even whether you're driving with a driver's license,
right.
Or even somebody that's staggering down the street.
Right.
Won't get as big a trouble as somebody that's driving down the street that's drunk.
Mm-hmm. How does our legal system define those? I think it used to be over $250. You steal something over $250, it's that word that starts with F. You're guilty of a felony. Something not as serious, maybe you steal something, $5, is still a crime. You still have stolen something, but now it's not a felony, it's a misdemeanor. So our law says there are differences as far as infractions, and that kind of takes you into that old discussion, is all sin the same? Well, there's a sense in which you would say all sin is sin, but you also don't want to make that statement mean that all sin is sin in the sense that consequences are equal, and also avoid what we find Jesus' point here being in Matthew 23. Sometimes the scales of justice are not balanced equally. We've seen, I think, especially in the last couple of years, some judges, they take small things and they just blow it way out of proportion. It's something like somebody was a serial killer, and they just really come up with some bizarre sentences. But God's always perfectly just. But he does make this distinction. Then he asks this question. Have you or have we not noticed that hypocrites, and who's a hypocrite? Let's define that word again. All right, they would be good examples as far as Bible examples. Hypocrisy in our day and time, what would that be?
Lying.
okay, you're pretending to live this way, you're claiming that this is the right way, but that's not the way that you live. And that's what the Pharisees and the Sadducees did, the scribes and some others. All right, he noted how hypocrites can be extremely critical about the least little detail not being observed. If someone happens to omit it, but then turn right around and turn a blind eye to obvious duties. You ever see that in the work world? Hypocrisy?
I always thought it was funny that on Fridays, the guys always took off work at noon to go play golf, but the women never got to. And maybe the day before, they took us all in the conference room and showed us a movie on sex discrimination. You know, how we have to. And then the next day, they turn around and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you are left scratching your head because they're saying one thing, but when it comes to practice, this is what they're doing. Or they say, we believe in treating everybody equally, but you have, for example, males doing the same job as females. Males are paid one wage. The ladies are paid maybe 10, 20, 30, perhaps even 50% less than the males. You can say this all you want, but if you're paying me 50% less than the other gender, then you are a hypocrite. You're not doing. So it happens in the work world. It happens in the church. Really at every level of society, and it does become very frustrating. Bonnie's illustration is very, really, really good for that. And people sometimes have been turned off from religion in general because of hypocrisy. Then point number three, he says, is it all right to be careful about little things? It is all right to be careful about little things, for in the same verse Jesus said, and let's go back to the reading that we had, these things ye ought to have done and not to have left the other undone. So, were they teaching sometimes the right things?
Yes.
Yes. So it wasn't a problem that they had missed out on teaching some things. They were giving out a lot of truth, but there were some things that they were not teaching and some things that they were not doing. All right, then verses 16, 17, and 33 of Matthew 23, that same chapter. Somebody want to read these three verses for us, starting with 16, then 17, and then 33? Don, 16 and 17 first. Thank you. And then if we could move down to verse 23.
Woe unto you, scribes.
Oh, I'm sorry, 33.
33.
Same chapter, but verse 33.
Ye serpents, ye generation of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell?
Okay. What are some of the words that Jesus used to describe these people and their hypocrisy? He says, you are
blind guides.
Well, you don't want one of those. You are
fools.
And he also likened them to serpents or snakes. So bad news on every count. This is how the Lord, this is how heaven views hypocrisy. So we're not always going to get it right. But we should try to do the very best that we can because God is watching, as are the people. Anything that you want to discuss before we leave this section? All right. Let's think about the mote and the beam. This takes us back to Matthew chapter 7. Jesus asked, and why beholdest thou the mote? That would be like a small speck that is in thy brother's eye. But considerest not the beam? That would be like a telephone pole that is in thine own eye. This attitude, too, is a type of hypocrisy. For Jesus then said, you're a hypocrite. First, you need to do what? You need to cast out the beam, get rid of the telephone pole. Then you're going to be able to see clearly, so you can cast the mote out of thy brother's eye. If you are an individual who is really interested in God, and you see a speck in your brother's eye, looking at it from a Bible perspective, not necessarily our own perspective, but looking at it from a scriptural perspective, what would go through the mind, do you think, of you? You see a small issue in somebody else's life.
Should I say something?
Yeah. And as you process that, you kind of first want to do a little internal looking and think, is my life up to snuff? I can remember I've given this illustration a time or two before, but preacher, a good man, knew that one of his elders liked to go out and golf in shorts. Now, I don't know that that's the worst thing in the world. I don't know what the shorts look like. But for him, he really was bothered by that. Now, maybe the shorts were immodest. Maybe they were down to the knee and he just didn't like shorts, didn't like to expose his legs. I don't know all those details. But, you know, he felt like he had to go and talk to that elder about him wearing shorts on the golf course. Well, I'm not sure that I would make that a telephone pole item. I mean, it wasn't like he was trying to be naked out there on the golf course or anything like that. And maybe that wasn't the best attire to wear, But I do think in my mind that helps us realize that when we look at something, we want to look at it and is this really an issue? Is this something that's really significant? And before I go out and start chasing down every possible problem I can see, let me look at my own life and make sure that things are pretty well squared away before we start going out and trying to correct everybody else. So Jesus gave some good advice there. Thoughts that you want to add or ask before we pick up the rest of that paragraph? Okay. He goes on to say, we have heard the principle paraphrased many times in statements such as these. I'm not sure I've heard all of these. He says, don't criticize others for doing the same things you do, or clean up around your own back door before talking about somebody else's. I'm not sure I've ever heard that one. Anybody? Okay, maybe that's just from a part of the country we're not familiar with. But anyway, he thinks it's some abuse, that statement. All right, then we turn over to the 8th chapter of John. Here we have some more information about the scribes, the Pharisees, the same kind of people that were condemned by Jesus in Matthew chapter 23. And in this case, they have a woman who was taken in adultery. Now, you have to kind of visualize what's going on here. If you are a scribe and a Pharisee, and you want to catch Jesus, you want to set him up, so to speak, what do you think the chance is going to be that Jesus is in your area, he is going to be teaching, and everything is just lined up to catch him? And you just happen to, you know, rove around town, and you find this woman in adultery, and she's just in a spot where you can grab her and bring her to Jesus, and everything just lines up perfectly. What do you think the chance is of that happening?
Pretty slim.
I would say it's pretty slim. It's not going to be very high. So I can't say for sure, but unless they had some peeping Toms back then, I'm guessing that this was some kind of setup. And they waited until Jesus was in the right area. They set things up. And once everything was arranged, it's let's go in and grab her and let's bring her before the Lord and let's make a big show about this. Well, take that scenario, which I think is very likely, and it's very well what happened, very possibly what happened, and take it back to what we were saying just a few minutes ago. What should these fellows have been doing? They should have been checking out their own life, and yet they're plotting and doing these kinds of things, and that was not good. And yet that would contribute, I think, to the condemnation that the Lord levied on them. All right, then, going down to the quote, now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? Jesus, though, saw more than this accused woman. He saw sin in the lives of his accusers. Question number one, what did the Lord say to the accusers? Okay. What was he telling the people to do? You look where? At your own life. And if you think you really have things squared away, then what needs to happen? You go ahead and find the rock. You get the first rock if you think that your life is so squared away. These people were in the wrong, but at least I will give them a little credit. What would you give them a little credit for? All right. I mean, they were not so hard-hearted at this point that they just went out and all grabbed rocks and killed her. So they did have a little bit of a conscience. They were willing to go and to a certain degree, look at their lives, but it certainly was not going to be to the degree or exactly what God wanted. Question number two, what did the accusers then do? All right. They left. And how did they leave? All right. What do you think is significant about that? They started with the oldest, and then finally the youngest is still there, and the youngest decides to leave too. Yeah. Does that tell you a little something? Maybe in general about people as they look at their lives when it comes to sin? Well, there would be that. But do you find, and this is probably not going to be true in every case, but do you find that oftentimes with younger people they may be less sensitive to sin than older people?
Yeah.
I think that's true. They've not had enough, as much experience as older people. They've not reflected as much, and maybe they're going through life and thinking, hey, I'm a good person, and I've just got it all figured out, and nobody lives the kind of life that I live. Well, there were some older people who hopefully had more wisdom than the younger folks, perhaps had heard a lot of the rabbinical teaching, read God's word, and they concluded, we see the point. So they headed out, and then others began to follow.
They were also, the younger ones probably were looking at the older ones there, that probably some people that they looked up to, and when they all of a sudden see them going away, they're pricked in their hearts too.
Yeah. I think that's true, that, if he's not doing it, it's probably not a really good idea for us. Let's take that point and expand it for just a second. If you have a culture which doesn't respect age, Thinking about that question in terms of John 8, what kind of issues do you think you're going to have? Or let me put it this way. If a culture doesn't respect age, do you think you're going to have some problems in that culture?
Sure.
Yeah. You have a parallel to parents, don't you? What should one of the things that parents do happen? All right, teaching the children, and you have restraint there. From the older and the wiser, hopefully, teaching restraint to the younger. Shouldn't it work that way in society as well? The younger people are learning restraint and getting guidance and trying to figure out how to go through life. But if that younger generation decides that they're going to despise the old folks, you have some problems. Okay, question number 2A, I guess we might say. What did Paul say in Romans chapter 2, verse 1, about the one who judges another while being guilty of the same things? Anybody write it down? All right, you judge, but you're just as bad as the other folks. So, you know, it's back to hypocrisy, right?
You could condemn yourself. You should have done something different yourself.
Yeah, and it's easy to do that. For example, you have a person who comes along and says, well, you smoke, you're tearing up your body. That's a bad thing. And they just really pounce on the person about smoking. Well, I'm not enthused about smoking for a lot of reasons. I do believe it damages the health. I don't think it's the best use of stewardship. I don't think it's the best use, that's the best example. A lot of things can be said in conjunction with smoking. What about the person who's making that case? And anybody see the BNP from yesterday? Nobody saw it yet?
About the eating?
Yeah.
I didn't go out and check the website.
There was a guy who went to Golden Corral,
ate
50 pounds of food in 7 hours. Golden Corral, the manager finally kicked him out, and then the guy got angry, even though Golden Corral gave him the meal for free, and now he wants to sue for $2 million. So it's a fascinating story. So if you're on that list and you didn't see it, you may want to go back and review that. But anyway, regardless of that, here's a fellow who's pouncing on somebody about smoking, but, you know, he goes down, and he may not eat 50 pounds, but, you know, overeating is what he does day in and day out. Well, does he have a problem?
Yes.
But it's really easy for him to jump on the guy who's smoking so he can sort of forget about the fact that, you know, he just loves to binge every single day of the week. So it's kind of trading this for that, and that's very easy to do. People sometimes feel a lot better because they can blame him or her or them, and then they feel pretty good about themselves. But Jesus warns about that, and he knew that game, and he said, you don't want to do that. Paul also was aware of that, hence he talks about that in Romans chapter 2, verse 1. Anything that you want to add or ask?
Fred, how big was this person?
Big. I mean, I don't remember. Yeah. I'm thinking he looked like he was in at least the 400-pound range, maybe 450.
Well, there had to be there had to be some sort of a medical issue. You can't eat 50 pounds of food regularly.
No, I don't imagine. Well, he said he didn't get to go out very often. I didn't mean that as a joke. I mean, that's actually in the article. So this was kind of a special treat for him, at least as I understood it. So he decided he was going to go out and get his fill with 50. Now, Teresa asked, she said, how do you know he ate 50 pounds of food? Well, I don't know that they weighed it, but I'm just guessing that they could say, okay, you ate this roast and that and the other and about 50 pounds of food. But, yeah, sure.
You mentioned a minute ago about the elderly. Kind of personal example, when I was younger, I was probably more apt to be fast at accusing. And as I get older, I guess, I'm more understanding and sympathetic, because some of those I've been there. And I feel for that person, maybe help them out through my errors. But I do remember as I was younger, I was probably very quick to be judging and accusing.
That's probably more typical than not. A person who came up in an environment where they didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't do drugs and so forth, see someone, he's a druggie, he's an alcoholic, he's a chain smoker, those kinds of things, because that's contrary to maybe the way that we were raised, contrary to the things that we did, and it's very easy to pounce on those things, and it makes us feel good. Well, look what I do not do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And yet, as you get a little bit older, you can look back on those times and say, it's true that I did not do those things. However, if I'm honest, I was involved with this and this and this, and while those things would not go very well with God, the activities that I was involved with also would not have gone over very well with him. So Usually with age, people become a little more reflective and a little more thoughtful and a lot wiser. But sometimes people need to go through that period. And older people will hopefully be a little sympathetic with younger people, because the path that they see being taken by someone, chances are they were on that same part of the journey way back when. So, good thought. Rick?
Years ago, I had a young person, younger than me, probably 20, 25 years younger than me, came to me. I was an elder at the time. And they asked me a simple question. As you get older, do you still sin as much? My answer was, it's different. And being that the things that bothered me when I was much younger, they don't bother me anymore. Mm-hmm. But the devil is still out there. There's other things that he tempts me with that wouldn't have tempted me with
right.
when I was younger.
Yeah, temptation never goes away, but it can, like anything else. It's just like the desires. Early in life, a person may say, I desire to travel, or I desire to do this, this, and this, and 40 or 50 years later, still desires, but now they may be completely different from what the desires were 3 or 4 decades ago. And temptation follows the same path. It changes, when you're single, temptations may fall into this category. Newly married falls into this category. Kids are grown. Maybe a spouse is lost. Temptation is going to be in a constant state of flux. Yes,
very. Still there.
That's exactly right. Right?
We give these guys quite a bit of credit for their soft heart, that some of them might have had reputations that they wanted to protect and didn't want Jesus to expose their sin.
Mm-hmm.
So they might have exited for that reason, too.
Yeah. That's true. You don't know exactly what all was going through the minds of the people or what they hoped to accomplish, but that would also be a definite possibility. Good thought. All right, staying with what we have in Romans chapter 2, let's think about verse 3 if we've looked at that as well. What thought-provoking question did Paul ask? Do you think that you're going to escape? And the implied answer is what? Yes or no? The implied answer is no, you will not escape. You can switch things around a little bit and change things, but you're also going to be accountable. All right, top of page 26. These people who called themselves Jews, guides of the blind, instructors of the foolish, teachers of babes, Matthew 23, 17 through 20, that same chapter we were talking about a few minutes ago, were reminded that they must practice what they taught. Can't be like the illustration that Bonnie gave. They could not criticize a man for stealing if they themselves were thieves. They could not condemn adulterers if they were adulterers. As Jesus put it, they must get the beam out of their own eyes first. They must not have the same sins or greater sins than those of the people they taught. New heading, by showing that one cannot feel superior to others. We touched on this a little bit ago. Let's get some helpers lined up. Matthew 9:12, Romans 3:9, Luke chapter 10, and we'll also look at Luke chapter 18. Matthew 9, verse 12. Sherman, we'll start there. Brian, we'll go with you on Romans 3, verse 9. Carol, we'll look to you for Luke 10. That'll be Luke 10, 31 and 32, and then Luke chapter 18, 9 to 12. All right, Lois, Luke 18, verses 9, 10, 11, and 12. Let's start with Matthew chapter 9, verse 12. We'll read that in just a second. Because the Jews were children of Abraham, they felt superior to those of other races. In fact, they considered the Gentiles as dogs, and they had no dealings with the Samaritans. Many of the Jews never did accept the Gentiles as their equals. That was a huge problem, even after the church had been in existence for a while. Many did not even want the gospel to be preached to the Gentiles, though Jesus said every creature. Some of the Jews did not want the Lord to go among the publicans and sinners because these people were not in from of their class. How did the Lord answer their criticism according to Matthew 9:12?
But when he heard it, he said, they that are whole have no need of a physician, but they that are sick.
Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it? You're well, everything's fine, really don't need to go to the doctor. You get sick, go see the physician. All right, the Jews thought that they were the people of God, the Gentiles, your dogs. And Jesus said, if that's your view, then they're sick. They need salvation. They need me. Romans chapter 3, verse 9.
What then? Are we better than they? No, in no wise. But we have before proved, both Jews and Gentiles, that they're all under sin.
Okay. Looking at especially the latter part of that, why should one group not feel superior to another group in the religious realm? We're all in the same boat. All guilty of sin. Now, your sin might be different than my sin. My sin might be different than their sin. But each one of us has broken God's law. We continue to break God's law. That's also in Romans chapter 3, verse 23, as far as all have sinned and fall short, present tense of God's glory. And there is no reason to feel superior. There is no reason to boast. Anything that you want to discuss before we look at Luke 10? Let's move to Luke 10, 31 and 32. Carol, I believe that's you.
And by chance, chance a certain priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise, a Levite also, where he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side.
Okay. Question is, why didn't these fellows help him? He was a...
It doesn't say.
I think it's implied. If they were Jews, the priest, the Levite... What do you think his nationality would have? Wouldn't have been a Jew. Probably a Samaritan. Definitely not a Jew. So Samaritan would seem to be likely in that area.
Well, the Samaritan helped the Samaritan.
Yes.
33, he was a Samaritan.
Wait. Let's see.
He was a Samaritan. I think they just didn't want to help somebody. Because a certain Samaritan came along and helped this man that nobody else would help. And that was the big deal that the Samaritan had.
Yes. First, tell priestly looked and did not help him. Can suggest why they did not help them.
It could be the lack of compassion. They didn't want to take the time.
What if the fellow had blood on it? They didn't want to touch that either.
Well, that could be. Yeah, I had a different thing in my head. So thank you. Yes, you're right. The story of the Good Samaritan, he was, those things. He had compassion on him, yes. So let's go back to that for just a second here. The priest and Levite look him. Can you suggest why? Compassion, any other reasons?
For what, not helping him?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to take his time.
Okay. Or maybe he was not like them, a different. Or it could have been maybe that there was danger there that certainly was common on that road, so they didn't want to risk themselves. That's true. You know, there are times where people fall into that category. When Teresa and I were coming back from down south, we had too much stuff anyway. There was no room for him, but we saw some. Well, I mean, it made me feel better. So confession time. But there was this fellow, he was begging for a ride, and in today's world, you know, hitchhikers, it's just not quite like what it was 30 years ago. But we both looked at him and we thought, well, what if we didn't have the truck all packed up? Would we have stopped and helped him? And sometimes, you know, you just look at whether it's got, you know, the person is bloody or you just feel like whatever reason. Sometimes there may be concern about safety, those kinds of things. But you can fall into those kinds of things. And it goes back to sometimes a heart issue, sometimes a matter of practicality. But it is something to watch. Okay, Luke chapter 18, 9 through 12. Okay, thank you. Let's start with that first question from verse 11. Tell how the Pharisee felt about the publican. Good or bad?
Bad.
He felt bad. And he said, look, I'm not like this guy. What don't I do? He implied that he was just, not he, but he implied that the other fellow was just or unjust. He implied he was unjust. And concerning himself, he's unjust, but that's not true for me. And what else did he say about the other fellow, or at least imply about him?
Said like the rest of men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this
publican. Yeah, not like the other men. And then he talks about the publicans would have been people who involved with a lack of justice, extortion, not always necessarily a sexual sin, but that certainly was true for many people. So he makes the comparison to himself in contrast to other men, especially this fellow, and he felt pretty good about himself. And today, people do the same kind of thing. They look at their life and say, I don't do this, and I've never done that, and I'm avoiding these things. It's almost negative righteousness. And after they get through with all the things that they've avoided, or all the things that they've given up, how do they look at their relationship with God? I'm good. I'm good not because of what Christ has done for me. I'm good for what reason?
I'm good.
Because I'm good. And that's really what this fellow was saying. And did he go down to his house justified or not? He was not justified. The other man who said, God, be thou merciful to me, a sinner, he was justified. Point B, for whom did Jesus give this parable according to verse 9? People who trusted in themselves and set everybody else at not. They felt like they were good to go. C, do brethren have any right to despise others because they may work at a different job or come from different backgrounds? No, and that's right. I heard several times a story about a principal and janitor. Now, you would think under normal circumstances that in the school system, if you've got the principal, or maybe even the superintendent maybe working, or at least in school that day, and it's time for lunch, as you go through the day, the superintendent or the principal, how much time you think he's going to spend with the janitor? I wouldn't think very much time would be spent there because they're, you know, one's a white collar, one's a blue collar job, and they're doing very different things. So unless the janitor has an issue that needs to be discussed with the principal, the superintendent, or unless the superintendent has a problem that he's going to discuss with the janitor, probably not much interaction. But in this story, which I understand to be true, every day these two fellows got together. They had lunch together, they talked together, they could be seen in the halls together visiting, and you know, not for extensive periods, but I mean, there was a noticeable amount of contact. Well, it turned out that these two fellows worshiped at the same congregation. Not only did they worship at the same congregation, they both served as elders. They had several things in common. And even though their jobs normally would have caused there to be a distinct division between the two, the brotherhood, the work there, caused them to be united very, very closely. So once again, that question, do brethren have any right to despise others because they may work at different jobs or come from different backgrounds? I think a better answer to that question would be, by no means, absolutely not, because we're joined together by Christ. Then he talks about Romans 13, verse 9. What's the question there that Paul asked?
Are we better than others?
Yeah. And what's the answer? No. That is in the same context of sin, and Paul makes the point we are all guilty of sin, Jews and Gentiles. From James chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. Anybody turned over there by chance and would like to read it for us? James chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. Sure, Kitty's got it. Thank you. Let's think about this from two or three perspectives. You're visiting a congregation, and you come in, you've put on your Sunday best. You're greeted, and someone says, this is our most comfortable seat. Here's where you get your own copy of the songbook. Here is where you can hear the sermon. Here is where you have the best seat in the house. How does you feel? Wow, I mean, it's nice. Brought me a church bulletin, and I mean, you know, just about everything, but served me breakfast. I mean, that's pretty nice. All right, they do that for you. And then as you're waiting for things to start unfolding a little bit, you see somebody else come in, and it looks like a homeless person. And they say, well, you know, you kind of stink. We got a cry room back here. You go in here, maybe we'll get you a chair. Now, if you're up here sitting in your nice seat, and you witness what I just described, how are you feeling now? Or how should you feel now? Yeah, kind of like, I think I came to the wrong spot. I mean, I appreciate all the nice things that you did for me, but if this is how you treat me, who seems to, you know, be what you would consider somebody who has their act together or somebody that you like, and then you take somebody else and you shove them off in the back room, I don't like that very much. Well, what if we reverse things a little bit? What if we're the poor homeless man and we're invited in and we're treated well? How would you feel if you just came off of the street and somebody treats you like that? Feel like $1 million. Here's somebody who loves me. I mean, who are these people? And as you're sitting here, the reaction might not quite be the same, but you see somebody else coming in and they say, oh, you know, you're kind of dressed well, you're overdressed, you go sit back there. How might you feel? Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, why would they treat me like this? You know, what's going to happen to me? You know, were they looking for somebody like me for something not good? I begin to wonder a little bit. You would want people to be treated equally, wouldn't you? So in that particular case, come up here. You're a visitor. Here's our best seat. Somebody who is stinky and poor and whatnot comes up here. Here's also our best seat. We're going to put you two together. We're going to treat you equally. That's the right thing to do. That was not being done based on what we find in the book of James, and James condemned the people very, very strongly for it. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at the next section?
Well,
Okay. Here we talk about calling sins by name. Some scribes and Pharisees of Jerusalem said that Jesus' disciples transgressed the tradition of the elders by eating bread without first washing their hands. What kind of washing are we dealing with here? Is it they didn't have their antibacterial soap or something else? The washing of the hands. All right, it's not a cleansing issue. It's a ceremonial cleansing. It was a ritual. Jesus replied, verse 11, "Not that which goeth into the mouth defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, this defileth a man." He then explained, verse 18, that those things which proceeded out of the mouth come forth from the heart. Beginning with verse 19, what do you find as far as some of the sins? He says they're evil thoughts, and there are murders, and there are adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemy. Well, that's how sin starts, doesn't it? Person just doesn't typically go out. Well, our law does make a distinction here. But a person typically doesn't just go out and say, okay, I'm going to kill somebody tonight. Usually there's some kind of motivation. Maybe there's hate, there's anger. A person has become upset over something. I'm going to hurt him. No, I'm not going to hurt him. I'm going to kill him. Sin comes from the heart. And a lot of what we're talking about tonight goes back to the heart. Good things in the heart, good things are going to flow out from the life. Bad things from the heart, bad things are going to come out as far as how people act. As we all know, it's difficult to separate sin from those who commit it. Hence, in condemning sin, Jesus often mentioned the sinners, and the scribes and the Pharisees were frequently on his list. Jesus' disciples, as well as God's great men before them, did the same thing. Nathan said to David, "Thou art the man," 2 Samuel 12. David had committed adultery with Uriah's wife and then had Uriah killed in battle. Peter said to those who had crucified Jesus, "God hath made that same Jesus whom ye've crucified both Lord and Christ," Acts 2:36. Peter also said to Simon in Acts 8:21, "Thou hast neither part nor lot in this matter. Thy heart is not right in the sight of God." John said to Herod concerning the woman Herod had taken, "It's not lawful for thee to have her," Matthew 14:4. People must be told about their sins, and sometimes those sins need to be named. Let's see what we've got. 6 minutes left, and how much material? We can come back and look at these if we have time. You do have some similarities as far as the sins in Romans 1, 29 to 32, 1 Corinthians 10, 6 to 10, and in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 24. Paul talked about in the last days men are going to be lovers of self and so forth. But let's see if we can get through the rest of the material, picking up now with the top of page 28. Revelation 21:8, we have several types of sinners listed, little different than what we find as far as the three passages on the previous page. How's the list start? The fearful, the unbelieving, the abominable, and the murderers, the whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, and how many liars? All liars. So he gives several people, and you can go back and see how these sins begin in the heart. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. Another important passage, this one though coming from the Old Testament. There's some things the Bible says God hates. Does God hate all sin?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever heard a person say, maybe it's a new relationship, a young man's found a young woman, or maybe some people have been together for a while, and the one partner in the relationship says, "The one thing I can't stand is this." And he or she could do all kinds of things, say all kinds of things, do all kinds of things, but if they do this, that's it. Anybody ever hear that? A couple of us have. Yeah, well, yes, and maybe even stronger than that, but I mean, this is going to be the deal breaker. What would that be in some minds? What would that be for some people? They would say, if you do this, that's it. All right, I think that's probably going, adultery is probably going to be the other heavy hitter there, but a lie. That's the one that I typically heard. If he lies to me. Well, you can understand why, I think. What's a lie do? If I lie to you, it breaks trust. And then that's going to be very difficult to reestablish. It's hard to have a good relationship with someone if you can't believe what they're saying. So you see as you look at Proverbs 6, 16 to 19, that certainly listed the second item. Item number one, God hates a... Okay, or proud look. What would be the big issue with pride in God? Why would that be especially nauseating to him, pride?
Put themselves before God.
All right. Or you're saying, look, this is me and I've got something to brag about. And God says, no, you don't. You're guilty of sin.
I think that would be another word for hypocrite.
Yes, I think that would. You know, look at me. Yeah. If we look closely, then here's what we see. Lying. You've got the lying tongue. Hands that shed not just blood, but hands that shed innocent blood. Abortion there comes to mind. What else? A heart that devises wicked things. Feet that run to mischief. False witness. And then you've got discord among brethren. So there's some things that God says, these items really, really irritate me. By giving yourself as a sacrifice for sin. Let's get through that as well. Only through Christ can we get rid of our sins. But giving us this access to forgiveness cost his precious blood. His great sacrifice constantly reminds us of how terrible sin is and how important it is for us to overcome it. Many are the scriptures which remind us of Christ's great pain in condemning sin through his suffering. And this is kind of a very different direction, but if we want to see how God views sin, here's a good example of it. It made Jesus suffer. John chapter 10, verse 11, the good shepherd does what? He gives his life for the sheep. Colossians 1, verse 20. And having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile all things unto himself. And then we come down to 1 John chapter 1, verse 7. If we walk in the light as he's in the light, we have fellowship one with another. And the what of Jesus Christ? The blood does what? Cleanses us from all sin. Then Revelation 1, verse 5. And from Jesus Christ, who is a faithful witness, and the first begotten of the dead, and the prince of the kings of the earth, unto him who, or that, loved us and washed us, the ESV says loosed us from our sins by his own blood. Two more, Ephesians 2, verse 13. But now in Christ Jesus, ye who were sometimes were far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ. It's the blood that allows us to be in a right relationship with God. And then finally, Hebrews 9, 13 and 14. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling the unclean, sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, there's that word again, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge or clean your conscience from dead works to serve the living God.